I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. That's right, Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, geeks of the world, and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt.
Ah, it feels good to be back on Friday. It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, we were on Thursday
last
week.
This is the way the weekend is supposed to begin.
Isn't it, though? I signed up for this. This is the contract I signed. We're back to normal.
It's like settling into a comfy chair.
Yeah, and settling into what represents about 2 weeks, maybe a little bit more than 2 weeks before we all see each other at Nerdtacular. Like, literally everybody on this show will be there tonight, and I'm very much looking forward to it. And it's going to be great to have us both there, Tom, don't you think?
I cannot wait. It's going to be so much fun.
Well, let's introduce our guests we have with us today.
I can't wait. I'm going now.
Okay, see ya. See you in a couple hours. It's not a bad flight. You'll be fine. It is my pleasure to join to the show. Let's start with Joel Duggan, cartoonist extraordinaire on the show forever. We've been wanting him on. Now he's on. How's it going, Joel?
Doing fantastic. Yeah, Thank you for having me.
We had his girlfriend on. I will let you out there try to figure out which girl I'm talking about. Just for fun. I think many of them know, but it's good to have you, Joel. And how's the comic world treating you? Starcross still doing well, all that kind of stuff?
I'm so busy with commissions and happy to be so that I've actually had a hard time getting to Starcross.
Oh, so wow.
There's comics coming. I'm on it. It's on the checklist for this weekend, but I've been doing a lot of commissions for readers, which is really flattering. So happy to stay busy in that way.
That's wonderful. Yeah, very nice. Also with us, we have Alpha Geek Radio's own Todd Whitehead. Todd, welcome to the show.
Hey,
man. Hey, you know, Todd, let me say something about Todd. Speaking of Nerdtacular, he's going to stream the whole damn thing.
Damn Skippy, I'm going to do my best. Yeah. Bring it all.
He's going to try to do as much as he can. He's got audio streams for sure. He's helping the video dudes out because he always does. They rely on Todd because Todd knows
stuff. At
the very
least, we're going to try and record every track, if not live stream it.
Yeah, one way or the other, we're getting content out of Todd, and it's much appreciated. So welcome.
What we do.
Yeah, welcome both to the show, guys. I'm excited to have you here.
So wait a minute. If we have a problem with Alpha Geek Radio while Todd is actually on the show, which is streaming on Alpha Geek Radio, and we call Todd, but he's inside Alpha Geek Radio, will that cause some sort of inception implosion?
Well, somewhere in that scenario, there's a slow motion van landing in the river, but you got to hurry.
You know what the problem with my assumption was?
What?
That we're not going to have any problems. Done.
You have the gavel. Come on. You can decide these things. You don't need
motion
us.
Carried.
Yeah, that's
nailed
right.
Nailed it.
All right. Here's your top of the show stuff.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Thomas.
Mike P. Kennedy sent this one in to our subreddit. I highly encourage folks to get in there and vote on the stories or submit some stories. It's currentgeek.reddit.com. A new app called Yo lets you send messages that say yo to anyone else who has the app. And if that weren't enough to make you laugh, the app has received $1 million in angel funding from a group of investors led by Moshe Hogeg. He's the CEO of an image sharing company called Mobile. He sort of inadvertently made the app become an app when he asked the Yo co-founder Arbel to design a single button app that he could use to call his assistant without having to pick up the phone.
These names, Mobile or Mobley, I guess, Moshi, Moshal, Arbel. I don't know if I trust any of these names. So weren't these guys hit with some kind of hack today? There was some crazy.
Yeah, some folks at Georgia Tech figured out how to hack the app to reveal phone numbers and stuff like that. But Yo got right on it. They hired some security consultants and are fixing it if they haven't fixed it already.
Joel, is your social network life missing the puzzle piece that is Yo?
Absolutely not. No, I was reading this and I was like, you know, I deal with app developers sometimes, and some people have very good ideas, yet they don't get the funding they need to take them places. And to see something like this, and unless I'm misunderstanding it, you know, being as simple as it is and useful, useless, I'm not exactly sure what the purpose is here.
Yeah.
I want to get, I don't even need a million. I'm cool with a half million for my Canadian version of the app. It'll send A to any Canadian that you want to send A to with the push of a button.
Well done.
See,
sir.
I need $250,000 in funding for the add-on to Yo, which will be dude.
Oh yeah, yo dude. I don't know about this. Like, Tom, all right. Look, we're clearly not the demographic or who they're aiming at here. They're aiming at people who rip through these apps like it's nobody's business. Things like Snapchat and things like, what's that new one everyone's into where you find people to date? It's like
Tinder?
It's like Hot or Not. Maybe it's Tinder. I don't know. There's a million of these things. And I feel like every other day there's something new. A $1 million. Let's say they make the app. Well, it's already out. But let's say the app just does crazy business and they make a ton of them. And I don't know how they're making money. Let's say they just make money because people are currency, right? So they have a lot of users. What's the end game, though? This has to be flash in the pan. There's no long-term goal. Can there be?
Scott.
Were they saying about Twitter?
Audience first.
Okay. All right. And then
what? You figure out what the hell you'll do with them.
I don't know if I like that anymore.
I see a growth curve and leveraging of platforms that can happen. And therefore, I'm willing to up my stake by percentage points. Business, numbers. Is it working?
Yeah, no, I still hate this.
I'm getting a call from an angel investor. $2.3 billion coming to your Patreon now.
Great, I'm ready. You know,
I always try to find the side of the story that gets ignored. This one's tougher, I will admit. Although that scenario where Moshe Hogeg said, I just want a way to summon my assistant. So having an app where you both know, like, hey, when I send this little button, that means like I need you in here and I don't have to go pick up the phone and explain and all of that. I get that, right? It's like an intercom system. Sure. And in the current workplaces, you might be in any parts of the office or whatever. And so it's more convenient to do it over the smartphone.
Okay? All right.
I get that.
Yeah.
And so I can sort of see where people go, oh, well, then, you know, my friends and I could use that same app. And whenever there's like a World Cup score or goal, we can yo each other and it'll be fun because we both know why we're doing it. And it's, you know, I think those scenarios run out really quickly and they don't scale, to use a buzzword, when you have to set up in advance, like, okay, what does yo mean to you?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that Twitter, you could say, well, what was Twitter in 2007? I mean, these kinds of questions are probably surround every kind of startup or idea or whatever. And who knew that Snapchat would take off the way it did? I mean, that thing's worth real money. So, you know, I like that you do that. I like that you look at the side of this that says, well, now let's just wait and see. It's easy to be cynical on the surface, but I don't think I need it. I don't want yo in my life. All right. And if I have two phones, is it yo-yo? All right, moving on. What's the next story?
Our next story, rumors. Rumors are getting very rumory. Ooh. Around an Apple smartwatch. We had rumors this week about a 2.5-inch rectangular design with curved glass, an October release, 10 sensors, multiple screen sizes. You people now are familiar with the matter. I have just made you into people familiar with the matter. So what do you say?
Wow. Okay, so can I back up to 10 sensors? What the hell are those? Like, how many sensors do you need?
Okay, so like infrared, blood pressure, heart rate,
okay,
GPS,
galvanic response, lots of health stuff I could see.
Okay. How about like we're nowhere near this being like an RFID kind of thing, are we? Probably something like that, right?
Well, you could have an NFC chip in it, easy.
Good.
All right. Well, explain,
Apple doesn't
Todd.
Seem to like NFC or RFID, but maybe
this could be their entry into it.
Well, yeah. And that's my point. Do you think so, Todd? You say yes, some sort of identification chip. Let's just say you're saying that, even though I'm sort of saying that you're saying it. Let's say you're saying that.
I decided your opinion for you, Todd.
Proprietary or open standard?
Oh, completely proprietary. This is Apple.
Yeah, that's what they do, right?
They will make you adhere. I had experience with Apple jerking me around today. They have a system where they will take your SMS messages and you can do group sends that work only with other iOS devices. I carry a Nexus 4, missed 2/3 of the conversation and wound up with a very angry wife today, and I blame Apple.
Yeah, but that iMessage stuff is sweet if you're in the ecosystem. It's real good.
But I'm outside the ecosystem, as is a huge percentage of the population.
Yeah.
Is it changing that, though? Like, isn't that changing in September with Yosemite?
It is. Yeah. Yes. All that stuff becomes less
Yosemite
exclusive or whatever, and you can use
different... This messed up my life today.
Yeah. No, yeah. Think of today. Spend time in
I have
in
that
the
happen the, in the opposite direction, where Eileen will start texting me from her Android phone, and it goes to my Hangout. And if I'm not actually at my computer on Hangout, you know, with a tab open, I don't see the text.
Oh, weird. So Winch, so she's sending a Hangout message though. And yeah. for her, that's great for other Android users because they're gonna a lot like Same iMessage, thing. They're gonna see yep. it. Okay. All right. That makes sense. Well then you know what? They're all trying to do it. I mean, everybody wants proprietary, which I know.
I guess the difference is I can have a Hangout app running with notifications on my iPhone. I can't have an iMessage app running anywhere else.
Yeah, and that's the trick. So Joel, you wanna wear an Apple Watch? I'll just throw my hat in the ring and say I'm very interested in what this turns out to be.
Yeah, I'm very interested too, and it depends largely on the form factor. I am very happy with never looking back to leaving my watch behind when I got a cell phone, not even a smartphone. But when I started carrying a cell phone, I stopped wearing a watch. Yeah. And I never had expensive watches because I would bash them on everything.
Yeah.
And they would also get in the way when I was doing artwork. Like, I mean, like I couldn't wear it when I was on the Cintiq or anything like that. So to have it, if Apple can make it really thin with a really low profile, and have it be something that you can wear, like even under a shirt, and have it not be something that's intrusive. I'm really quite curious about it, and I'm starting to get a little bit better into fitness a little bit more lately. And I'm curious about the metrics and the new health kit stuff that Apple's coming up with.
Yeah, it seems to be timed pretty well for that. I would just say to sort of finish this out that this is a place where Apple does really well. In other words, when an innovative new design might be brewing over there, this is where they have strength. So they may not have strength in open standards or playing nice with other devices or any of those kinds of things. That's all. Todd is right about all that. But where they are strong is to say, look at this sexy, hot, freaking consumer thing that you're all going to want to have around your wrist. And I'm very anxious to see what it is.
Yeah. And with health information, particularly, having any kind of open approach has proved deathly to lots of attempts. So it could, if people trust Apple, be in their favor that they're like, yes, we've got very secure privacy standards around your health information.
Well, sure. Plus, you know, look at when they do this, they tend to have there's a sea of garbage that preceded it. And I'm not saying the Pebble's garbage necessarily, but there are a lot of sort of okay pieces of wrist gear out there that are all right. They all kind of do some things good and other things badly. And I would say that was a similar sea of products when it came to MP3 players in 2001, 2002. So they have a way of coming in and saying, hey, that half-aid thing you've been working on for 2 years, well, we're ready and we're going to do this other thing and we're going to knock it out of the park. I hope they can. And let's see if it's something we even want.
We are solving all the world's problems. We've solved communication problems with Yo. We've solved our health problems with the rumors of Apple's iWatch. And now we have solved faster than light travel. Another Jay Martin tipped us off to this at the subreddit. NASA's Harold White, who heads the Advanced Propulsion Team, unveiled images this week of what his warp engine ship might look like. This is real. He is really researching a warp engine. He calls it the ISS Enterprise, by the way. White's team has been working on an engine that would transcend space by shortening the distance between two points and allowing the craft to break the speed of light. There's no proof that it can happen, but NASA is experimenting and allowing him to research it nonetheless.
Well, that's a good... I feel good about knowing that. I mean, in a day and age where everybody complains that we're not giving any resources or any kind of priority to space exploration and stuff, this seems like a kind of out of nowhere, totally cool thing to be exploring to me.
We live in a world where a significant percentage of the population is convinced that the Large Hadron Collider is going to suck the planet into a singularity. How do you think they're going to feel about a warp field being formed in low Earth
Todd,
orbit?
It's exactly what we need to get away from the singularity we create at the LHC.
I'm sorry I missed the obvious answer.
Right, right. Here's the thing with that singularity deal. The reason I don't like it, because let's say it is possible that it could just create a black hole and we're done. Everyone's out. There's not going to be any warning or news that it happened or anything. It's literally going to be do-do-do-do-do, doing my daily thing, and then gone.
Are you saying I could die at any moment?
Yes, but no one would be able to be around to mourn your loss. That's the difference here.
No one would be around to send a yo.
Yes. If you
stupidity is immune to gravity. Yes.
They should reverse yo and make it oi. Anyway, here's the thing.
That's the Australian version.
So Todd, let's say that tomorrow you're at a client's on site and you're working on a server, right? You got some kind of blade in there, you got some Linux thing going on. And you're like, what is going on? Electrocuted down on the ground, you're out. No more Todd Whitehead. We would all be sad. We would remember you, and we would talk about your great heroic deeds while you were on this green earth. All right? This thing happens. There's nobody to tell the tale. It's just everybody's in a tiny little atom together. We're done.
The pale blue dot becomes the tiny black spot.
God, it terrifies me.
What's really scary is that when it's all over, the only data floating around the universe is yo, and you get all these little ETs just kind of yo.
That's terrible.
What was this? Like, what happened here? We only have this one clue.
We must find the yo planet.
Yeah, that's not good.
Is it yo planet or is it my planet?
Hold on, Canada. Let's talk about Canada for a sec with NASA stuff. You guys don't have you have your own Canadian thing, right? You have your own.
Yes, I'm trying to remember exactly what it's called.
By the way, people love it when I get ignorant about international stuff, so I do it on purpose. Look,
I'm a slouch when it comes to American history and all that kind of stuff too. I don't remember exactly the name of the.
It's the Canadian Space Agency. Thank you. I was waiting for the chat room. I was kind of
the CSA,
stalling.
The CSA. There you go.
Yeah, CSA. Yeah. And we do. And there's an astronaut that's recently wrote a book about being on the International Space Station as well.
You got that guy that did that great video series, the YouTube channel.
Chris Hadfield.
Yes.
Awesome. That's his name. Yeah.
Oh, that's the guy. Yeah. He's great. Well, look.
King of Reddit.
Either way, I get excited. Because we always talk about how we're not doing enough to explore things with space and that particular part of technology. But when I hear about it, I just get stoked. I think that's awesome. Let's get off this blue dot. Let's go somewhere else. It's cool. Why not?
I think it's really neat how they've dipped into Star Trek. I mean, they've taken the real kind of, you know, mathematical calculations from the designer, but then inspiration, you know, when there's room for it from the original Enterprise series, which has influenced so much technology. And I think this would be like the ultimate tip of the hat. If it ever comes to be and the first one looks a lot like the Enterprise, mm-hmm. I think that'd be really, really cool.
I agree. Very nice.
Nethken pointed out that Netflix is now streaming Breaking Bad in 4K in all its markets. What? For all four people with 4K televisions that can view it. That joins House of Cards and nature documentaries from Moving Art as the things you can get in 4K on Netflix. Also, in other Breaking Bad news, AMC has ordered a second season of the spinoff Better Call Saul. If you're like, oh my gosh, I must have missed the first season. No, you didn't. It hasn't aired yet. And in fact, it's been delayed until the first quarter of 2015, but they still ordered a second season anyway.
So you said TVs, the four people that have 4K TVs, isn't also part of the problem here is that this stuff can't, it's not really 4K, is it? I mean, it's, I guess it's sort of is.
Yeah, it was shot high enough quality.
So it was shot in high quality, but even, let's say you got the fattest pipe in your neighborhood. Is it still truly, I mean, I know my 1080p that I get from Netflix looks great, but it's not really like, you know, it's not Blu-ray 1080p, you know?
Oh, well, that compression algorithm that they're using, it's kind of, that's a whole nest of complex behavior anyway, because you have to be able to transcode it for the television. Right now, any television can do 1080p if it says 1080p. Mm. 4K TVs are not quite so standardized. So at first, they were only able to do HEVC H.265 decoding on Netflix. But they said at CES this January that they would start being able to support the codecs on Sony, LG, and Samsung, because that first codec only worked on a certain number of, I think, Samsung sets. So that's a whole can of worms right there
that we don't want to open.
No.
We don't want to 4,000 worms. Here's the thing, though. Like, you know, Breaking Bad's, was it six seasons? Is that right? Do I have that right? I think that's right. Well, wait, five and then split into one. So it's kind of like six.
Yeah, it's so hard to count.
But that's a lot of content. And, you know, the idea that they could turn around on something this quick, I see this as kind of fast. You know, how quickly they said, hey, Breaking Bad is now in 4K if you have it available to you. That's kind of a big deal. Todd, what are you looking forward to, man? What do you want to see in 4K next?
I mean, for years now, the motion picture producers have been shooting stuff in way higher resolution than they had any hope of projecting it in, with the understanding from history that it would catch up. So we do have a lot of things like the Avatars of the world that are in the can at absurdly high resolution. So a lot of movies that are visually stunning will come and transition beautifully to 4K because they were already preparing for whatever was coming and have it in a form that can be easily transcoded into whatever 4K standard emerges. So movies shouldn't be an issue.
Actually, I was just going to throw in that there was an update to this multi-channel story that I didn't notice at first, where Sony and Netflix agreed to a subset of the interoperable master format for the transfer of the video and audio, which is an emerging specification. If that means anything to you, then that might clear things up. If it doesn't, don't worry about it. It still means they had to transcode it.
It's a pre-specification specification. The committee is still talking, but they feel confident enough. And it's something they can implement now, will look fairly sexy now, and then they can just send a firmware update later to make whatever the new standard is work later. It's like the pre-N routers that came out when they were still arguing about the 802.11n wireless standard. They wanted to get something to market because they want to say 4K when 4K is meaningless. It's just buzzwords right now.
It really eventually, is. I would even argue like online 1080p is still a buzzword. Like when YouTube claims 1080p content or even 4K they're now claiming on some stuff. It's not really. It's not at all, in fact. But it looks good. And maybe that's all that matters. I'm okay with a future where we quit niddling about tiny little details and you know,
niddling.
Like when people complain about PS4 versus Xbox One resolution and stuff, and the PS4's got better res on this or whatever. Some of that stuff is just like, well, we're kind of at a point, people, where it's not like we're jumping from the old, you know, 360 wide viewing screens that we had back in the day to a nice flat panel plasma. I mean, the first time that happened, everybody lost their crap. But who cares now? It's all close enough, yeah. You know?
For this old man, it got good enough with DVD quality through a DVI or HDMI input.
Yeah.
Anything beyond that to me is such an incremental improvement. And yeah, it's nice, but I stopped caring.
Yeah. Joel, you don't get anything in Canada. Like, you guys are always complaining about the streaming stuff.
Well, we do have Breaking Bad on Netflix. I don't know if we're going to have the 4K. I haven't checked.
The Twitter post said streaming in 4K everywhere.
Whoa. Everywhere for Netflix. Yeah. My concern actually involves the infrastructure, like the bandwidth caps and stuff like that. So Jocelyn and I actually switched to actually paying for cable, even though we don't watch anything on cable, because it alleviated the previous cap that we had. Because we were getting monthly bills in between $200 and $300 a month, given how much we do online. And a lot of that was Netflix streaming, but also video up and down for podcasts, video gaming, all that kind of stuff. And that is just with 720, possibly some 1080 from Netflix. Yeah. I don't know what, if we were decided to, you know, got sat down and decided to watch Breaking Bad in 4K, what that would do. Now, again, we have alleviated the cap, but if you're in an area where you've got a cap, like, I feel like that would just chew it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's always an issue. People were saying exactly the same thing about HD before HD streaming came around at all. Or before even high quality streaming came around, because the caps were lower. And the marketplace is always fighting against caps, it seems like. And there's always going to be some service that's not good enough for you to do the thing that's the coolest right then. But over time, and this doesn't help individuals that are in that situation, but over time, those tend to drift up along with the offerings, because it actually, even in a monopolistic situation, doesn't behoove companies to make it so you can't use the popular things. They don't want to be seen as, well, that place can't handle 4K video, right? Yeah. So they'll be like, oh, okay, well, let's up it from a 50 cap to a 300 cap. Okay, that one's getting chewed up by 4K now. Let's make that a terabyte cap. But they'll always try to keep it just as low as they possibly can get away with.
Well, when we see Star Wars Episode 7 and we try to spot the cast on Harrison Ford's leg, oh, did I say leg, Tom? What? Wait, is there an update to the Harrison Ford saga? What happened?
Yes, the Harrison Ford saga continues. BBC reporting just yesterday that Harrison Ford broke his leg, not his ankle. According to a statement from his publicist, his surgery was successful. He will begin rehab shortly. He's doing well. Looks forward to returning to work. One would expect his publicist to say things like that unless he were like dying.
Sure.
The BBC understands he was injured while filming a scene involving a door on the Millennium Falcon. Yeah. So some of that stuff that we heard ended up being true. Some of it was totally different.
Yeah. Brian Ibbett, friend of the program, obviously, has been a guest here a couple times on the morning show the other day. He said that, he made this very sarcastic statement, and I really stand behind it. He said, boy, it's a good thing this is just a small little independent film project with no real, you know, attention or, you know, anybody excited about it or anything. It's easy to get all your news stories mixed up. Why the hell can't they just say day one? Because it went from he was crushed to he hurt his ankle to some other back thing I read on some site. Now, like a week later, he broke his leg. We're just finding out. Why is it so? Is it because they're so clamped down on all news out of there? Like these fake leaks where orchestrated, but true leaks will never make it out because J.J. Abrams is going to kill anybody who says anything? Is it that tied down that we couldn't hear what really happened to Harrison Ford?
Hand tripped first.
Yes, it is all of those things. A, you don't have the right to anybody's health information.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Harrison Ford, if I'm Harrison Ford, he doesn't give a damn about news cycles or what you think you need to know. He's like, that's my own private information. Yeah. I'm not letting anyone know that.
I'm Harrison Ford.
Star Wars
Ford,
is already.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's already under super secret, strictures. So of course, instead of the Star Wars production coming out and saying, a door on the Millennium Falcon fell on Harrison Ford's leg and broke it today. He's getting surgery. They didn't say anything, which led to people piecing together some truth with a lot of wrong estimations and rumors, and you get all of this confusion.
Okay. Fair. You know, always the voice of reason. If I was him, I don't want people talking about my medical crap anyway, right?
But that's why I'm like, you know what? It's actually better just to put the story out there if you're Harrison Ford, because right. You end up with all this. Maybe he doesn't care, though.
You know. You have mysteries and you have memes like him holding that little piece of paper. Everyone went crazy with that. And, you know, you can have some fun with it. So, sure. Yeah, it's all good. Harrison Ford is fine. He's recovering. That's what matters most. At this point of the show, I would like to point your eyeballs to the pint glasses we have available at currentgeek.com as well as frogpants.com/store. That is our current, what do we call those? I want to call those show support packages. That's what we'll call them. We did a calendar before. We're doing this one now. These little pint glasses have, speaking of Star Wars, a picture of Chewbacca riding on one of those like yellow duck playground things with a spring in it. Don't ask me why. That's just what I felt like doing. Felt nerdy enough. Anyway, currentgeek.com for details, or like I said, frogpants.com/store. Go check it out.
In case you missed a look at one of the best dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
Oh, we're going to talk about Amazon, right? Is that the deal? Oh my gosh. Yeah. Look at this.
Fire phone. Fire in the phone.
There's a lot of, I think there's some indications out there in the marketplace that they're going to call everything a fire. I just think that's, I'm trying to be obvious here, but everything's got fire in it now. Kindle fires.
They kindled the fire. There'll be a blaze at some point.
Yeah.
One can guess.
So what are the basics of this whole schmear? And then we'll see if we can tear it apart.
I mean, it's a decent Android-based phone, although it's the forked version of Android that Amazon has. So you don't get the Google apps on it. You get the Amazon apps. 4.7-inch display. It's nice and bright, 590 nits. So they say it's going to be easier to read outside. Nice 13-megapixel camera, whatever. Quad-core 2.2 gigahertz processor. No great shakes, but it's not awful. The deal is it comes with two big features that I think are going to make people very excited. One is called Firefly. And the idea with Firefly is your camera can scan an object and tell you what it is, and you can then order it. So this is perfect for what's called showrooming, when you're out at a store and you're like, oh, I wonder what the price of that is on Amazon. Doop. And then it comes up.
I didn't think about how, so people already do this anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But now they're going to do it in this really easy, convenient way. Best Buy must be shaking in their boots. If the phone succeeds, and has a decent base of users or whatever, that's a pretty scary proposition if you're a brick and mortar store.
And Firefly also can listen. So it can tell you what TV show you're watching by hearing the audio. It can tell you what music you're listening to. And of course, give you the option to buy that television show or music through Amazon. And then the other thing is this weird dynamic perspective interface they have that has some sensors that track your face so that they can present the right image so everything looks 3D without having to put on glasses or have a lenticular display or anything. Mm-hmm. And you can do things like tilt the phone to see what's behind an icon or bring a menu over and some nifty stuff like that.
Yeah. So the eye tracking is a little creepy. It's four cameras. Some say that the reason the phone's only 720p is so that it can throw extra heavy lifting toward this four camera thing.
Makes sense.
Todd, you're an Android user, and clearly you like the rebelliousness of open systems and stuff. While this isn't open and forked, and not only forked, but forked a long time ago. Like, it's almost like you can't even call it Android anymore. It's got the kernel, but geez, they're so far down the forked road.
Yeah, it's unrecognizable.
It's not even recognizable as its origins. But is this a phone you'd want to get and replace your Android phone with?
Doesn't interest me in the slightest. Mm. In fact, its main selling point, Firefly, kind of freaks me out. The privacy advocate in me is going, well, what, listening and watching and recording everything? Mm. not just no, but who thought this was a good idea?
Lex Luthor. I'm sorry, Jeff Bezos. I'm sorry.
Harrison Ford.
Oh, Harrison Ford did. He's not going to tell you why either, because it's his own personal damn business.
He needs a good 3D scan of that tibia, you know.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, that just, it wigs me out. It seems like it's a massive fire hose conduit of demographic data flowing into the cloud. And I want to read the end user license agreement on this puppy.
Yeah.
Who, what is Amazon saying they're allowed to do with this anonymized user data?
Yeah. So Joel, do you want a device? I mean, here's the thing. We all love Amazon Prime. I do. At least I think we all probably do. I mean, it's a great, convenient way to get products. It's the number one marketplace in the world. You can get what you need, when you need it, how you need it. How do you feel about carrying around a device that takes you even further down the hole of, well, I'll just buy everything much more conveniently and do it in a way that maybe, you know, it's a little iffy on security.
I mean, if it worked in Canada, that would be great, because we all know that Prime has not crossed the border as far as the streaming and stuff like that anyway.
But products, right? Your shipping stuff is better, isn't it? Don't you get that kind of Prime level
Well,
stuff?
See, this is the thing. Is that, I mean, what we order comes from Amazon.ca. Even if we find it on .com, like, there's still like a – you don't always get the right deals. Things are priced different. Shipping costs more from the U.S. It used to be free, but not anymore. If you hit a certain price point, it used to be free, but now – that's only available if you're ordering through .ca. I feel that what did you call it? Not window shopping. What was it?
Showrooming. When you're
taking, showrooming. So the showrooming thing I find is a bit of a put off. Just from my experience in, you know, comics, where there's a lot of push to, you know, support your local stores and still buy stuff like that locally. I'm not worried about Best Buy, but I am worried about, you know, the local shops and design shops and things like that, that people might be doing this in. And if Amazon can't find the exact product, is it possible that Amazon could be offering an alternative product?
Probably.
You know, and then, so like, you can't quite, even, you know, the lunchbox that was hand painted that you want, but you can't quite afford, if they can say, oh, well, here's one that's really similar for like $12. I mean, what's that going to do to, you know, potential mom and pop places?
Well, plus, they're going to have this ability to collect data that you're not even thinking about. So if you and enough other people go into a certain store and scan a certain object that Amazon does not carry, that data could very easily be, parsed and said, well, now we need to carry that.
There's what Todd said to like your privacy, your personal data that you're putting up online. But then, like, if you're showrooming, I mean, you're also sending data from somebody's store. I mean, granted, I know it's a public store, but I mean, their expectations of, I don't know what the expectations of privacy are when you're running like a small boutique or an art shop. I'm assuming you think that the people that come in off the street are going to be the ones that see your products, not Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm pretty
torn on it too. There's no question.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, this feels like Walmart meets the Borg.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Walmart at least had to come in and build a store in your town to kill all the local business. Now their minions, Fly My Pretties, are going forth to assassinate them, and people are going to be doing it willingly and joyously. Oh, look at my cool phone. Hey, where's that store that used to be there?
But can you blame, I mean, just to take, I'm not, maybe this isn't devil's advocate. I'm not sure what this is. Corporate advocate for a minute. If we want companies to grow and do well and innovate, sometimes the things they do seem a little weird. But is anything Amazon's really doing? Because, okay, let me back this up. All the devices they make, all the hardware they make, seem to be devices and hardware designed for one job. And that job is 100% to drive people to buy content from Amazon, whether it be actual physical products or digital products, be they video, movies, whatever, books, and so on. So it only makes sense to me that this is a plan they would have as a company to keep growing. Like, if you want to get bigger and better at what you do, Amazon, this seems like a pretty good idea.
Here's where I think what you're saying starts to cause concern, because I think it's perfectly fair to put that out there. If that monopolistic ability gets rid of things that were better, then it's a problem, right? Yeah, and so, you know, it's funny that, Todd, that you used the Walmart example, because Amazon could do to Walmart what Walmart did to a lot of stores, right? You might go into Walmart, scan, have it shipped to your place, and people stop shopping at Walmart. On the other side of it, especially regarding things like comic shops, Joel, a lot of comic shops really were afraid of things like Comixology when they first showed up, and then realized that digital comics didn't eat into the high margin parts of their business. They may have eaten into some of the lower margin, you know, issues, but people still wanted to buy trades. They still wanted to buy collectibles. They still wanted to buy figurines. They wanted to buy rare actual physical objects. And it encouraged people to read comics and started bringing more people into the shops. So it's hard to predict which side of your business this is going to affect you. It could actually be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. Just like when digital music came along and the music industry was like, digital music is the enemy. We must lock it down and DRM it. That was exactly the wrong thing to do. And they're still digging out from that decision, that reaction.
Right.
And if you see it coming as a store owner, like you could easily say, hey, you know, here's this device or this item for your home. Find companion items, you know, on Amazon while you're here.
Totally.
You know, like, almost encourage people to, like, you know, get an added service from you so that they feel compelled to thank you and buy the product from you and then get accessories or other things that will augment the product or, you know, help the product be integrated into your home from Amazon that maybe aren't big sellers for you, and it's not worth it for you as a storefront owner to carry it, right?
Sure. But and they do this now. So when they pop up a screen that says other people who bought this item also bought, right? They do that now.
Mm-hmm.
What would stop them from saying, if these were ubiquitous enough, other people who scanned the item you want and bought that item also scanned and bought these four other items that may also be in the place you're in? Like, you could go pretty deep down that hole.
The right way to think, whether that's actually the thing that does it or not. But what the mom and pop stores and what the physical stores altogether should be doing is not trying to figure out how to shut Amazon down, but figuring out what can we do because we are physical and you are in our shop that Amazon can't, and then double down on that and sell that.
Yeah.
The thing that kind of brought that to mind for me was either a tweet or something I saw on Facebook where a bookstore had been posting a Goodreads list. And people had been snapping a photo with their phone of the Goodreads list, but then going elsewhere, probably Amazon or, you know, possibly even digital stores to buy those books that were on the list. And the sign in the store said, hey, if you're going to come in and partake and take advantage of our list, if you want these lists to continue, if you'd like this store to still be here, buy at least one of the books from the list here.
Yeah.
But maybe we don't, right? We're like nostalgic about these shops. And I'm not saying I'm against mom and pop shops, but if it's easier to buy things online and have them delivered and there's no other problems with it, which maybe there are, but let's, you know, for the sake of argument, then why should we force ourselves to do something that's less convenient just because that's the way it used to be?
Yeah. And that's kind of my whole point on this whole thing is if the market shows that they want this transition, which will probably be a slow one, but it's, you know, as slow as Walmart's dominance or as slow as, you know, video game or let's say movie rental stores going away. I mean, none of us are in here. None of us, I think, would argue that, man, I sure wish the only way to get videos was to go down to Blockbuster and rent them. I wish that was still the norm.
Well, and there's some great family owned video stores that I've rented from in my lifetime.
I did too. Sure. They were great and they were nice and you could have conversations with these people and all those nostalgic things were good and valuable and had their place. But none of us are saying that Netflix came in and ruined everybody. No, we're saying that seems like progress to us. So you could make the argument. I'm not necessarily, because I think, like Tom says, more of this has to play out and who knows, but you could make the argument that this is just progress. And Amazon happens to be a torchbearer in the progress right now. Maybe they're one of many, but you know, streaming music is another example of this. Video games on demand, Steam, these kinds of products are taking stuff off shelves.
Bookstores that are closing are Borders size stores and Barnes and Noble size stores. The bookstores that are sticking around are the small bookshops where the people actually know books and can help you and sell used books. They have advantages that you just can't get through the internet.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The whole thing's interesting to say the least, but for me to, like, part of me says, like Todd, I'm like, freaking the Borg, you know? But part of me says, well, you could say that about anything, and you know.
The raw tech, I think, is awesome. The idea of item recognition and, you know, cross-referencing a huge database, cool. the thing that gives me the internal squidgies is understanding what a massive accumulation of data that will rapidly become, and the kinds of data mining that can be done against that block of data is the piece that freaks me out. The technology itself, innocuous, cool, awesome.
Yeah.
What it gathers and what might later be done with that. As simple as what you mentioned earlier of, a lot of people are taking a picture of this thing. We should probably start carrying this thing, but taken to a more evil level of, we should make a competitive thing that crushes the first thing and we take over their market segment. So it's just, it's more not the tool, but how it is used. And I hope they use their powers for good.
Yeah, let's
hope. Amazon says that your Firefly data is stored in a separate part of your personal storage account in the cloud, but that Amazon doesn't use it in any way.
Yeah.
Today.
You have to trust them when they're saying that, but that's the right thing to say.
Yeah, right.
And EULA's, 2.0 might say something different.
All Todd's saying is you don't necessarily believe that, right? I mean, I don't know that I do either. That.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
We've been burned before where, a new person, a new regime comes in and takes over and opinions change and suddenly you're in the position of needing to opt out or de facto opting in to take my data, please. Yeah. So I said, just be cautious, be careful, read the fine print.
People get that way. They get biblical with their companies. They think that, well, if Google once said, do no evil, we are all taking that on every level and believe it and whatever. Well, that stuff can change, things can, they can sell names to Chinese governments. They can do these things.
The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides.
See, right? Look at you, dude. I like what you just did. All right. Let's talk real quick about this YouTube blocking thing. It turns out they're not really blocking and there were people squawking their heads off earlier this week. So what actually happened with the YouTube deal?
Yeah, this is another one of those. I'm pretty sure nobody's on your side in this argument sort of situation. Yeah. But YouTube has confirmed that they're going to start a music service. And the idea will be you'll be able to even play offline music videos from YouTube as part of the service that you pay for. As part of launching that service, they've redone their partner deals with labels. That's the key to understanding this, is that they have deals with labels different than the average Joe has when they upload their videos. Those deals up until now have been about revenue sharing, right? I get a piddly revenue share from YouTube when I put a video up there and choose, yes, give me some video, put some commercials on it. Labels get a better deal. So with this added subscription service, they're saying, okay, it's going to be ad free, but we're going to be getting subscription from people. So we're going to give you a cut of that as well. And any of the people who aren't paying for the subscription who see the ads, you're still going to get a cut of that. One representative of several independent labels doesn't like the terms of that deal. And Google has said, well, then we're going to block your channel. Now, what that meant has been up for debate, but the latest story from TechDirt and some research by Forbes seems to indicate that all Google means is you labels have a partner channel with us. If you don't agree to the terms of the new partner channel, you can't use the partner channel. You can't make money off advertising or the subscription service. It's all part of one deal. You're welcome to go put your videos on YouTube all you want, but you just can't make money through them with us unless you sign the deal.
And specific to those guys, we're not talking about like, well, okay, let me ask you this. I'm an independent artist. My band is called the Dingle Torps, okay? And we're sweet. We're really good. And we do covers and we're awesome. We love everything we do. So we've got our channel. Do I need to sign on to some label to continue to have my revenue, whatever, however
this
piddly
doesn't
it might
affect
be?
Anything but partner channels with labels.
Dingle Torps, woo! All right, I just threw two goats. Check it out.
The question is, could still be, is Google being evil by putting unfair terms to these smaller labels that have less bargaining power? That's a fair question. But the whole idea of, oh, they're blocking videos if you don't pay, if you don't let agree to their terms. They're not blocking the videos. They're blocking the ability to make money off the videos.
Right. Well, there you have it. So there's some clarification for you folks.
Tempest in a teacup.
Yep, always. An illustrated tech history book is a thing that Tom and I have been working on together for almost a year. Wow. Think about that. Tom, what's going on with the latest? What's the plan? What are we doing? We got July coming up.
Do we?
Yeah, I hope so. You'll have drawings from me soon.
Should we have a quick meeting during this plug?
Probably should.
No, Scott's working. I'm kidding, Scott, because he's got some pictures due here, you know, in the next couple of days for the July version of this. But they're Amazon Kindle singles. They go through every day in a month, and they tell you three or more things that happened in technology history on each day of that month. And then he's got illustrations for some of them in there as well. They're 99 cents. We've been doing them every month since October. So we're getting close. We're going to have the July one out soon to having the entire year wrapped up. So if you want to catch up, you can go get the back issues, check them out. They're available in Amazon Kindle
stuff. That's right. Not the evil part of Amazon where they're scanning everything, but the one where they just give you books.
You don't have to scan nothing.
Yeah, it's all fine. Don't worry about that.
America scores and wins.
We have a chance to ask our guests questions, and it's a quiz. It's how we do it every week. We ask questions in areas of their interest. They are not privy to these questions before they get them. Tom scores it in a really weird way. There's no way to kind of predict what the hell's going on there. But I trust him, and it always works out. If you guys get the answer right, you'll hear this. If you get it wrong, you'll hear this. You will never hear this. I don't know why I even played it. So here's your questions. Are you guys ready?
Bring it.
All right. I'll give Todd's his first. You ready, Todd? Let's do you first.
Hit me.
All right. Todd's questions are, hold on, coming up. There they are. All right. I have not read these before now. They are related to tech and IT work. Because you're one of the smartest, like, server admin / programmer man dudes I know. And so we thought it'd be fun to ask you all that. All right.
You don't know many people, do you?
I don't. So here you go, Todd. What was the code name for Windows NT 4.0?
Oh, hell, I knew this at one point. Crap.
Are you saying, is that your answer is crap?
No.
That may be the correct answer.
Yeah. It might be right. I don't remember 4.0 if it was any good or not.
I know Longhorn was XP, so Shorthorn.
All right. Incorrect. It was Daytona.
Daytona. Half point for making me giggle, though.
Yeah, and also reminding us about Longhorn. I'd forgotten that existed. That was ended up being Vista, right?
Wasn't it? No, Longhorn was XP.
Or XP. That's right. Here we go. In what year was Shoutcast streaming technology created?
Oh, hell, 1998.
You are off by 1 year.
Damn it.
It was 99.
So it gets 0.9 of a point.
Okay. That's not bad.
Off by one.
What is a security trade-off, or what is the security trade-off when you use an intrusion detection system?
It can decide on its own to close all your ports and shut everything down.
So that is a host performance degradation, would you say, or no?
Sure.
All right. Next up,
a half point because that would be degrading the performance of the host of all the ports.
Absolutely, would degrade everything.
Zero.
Which port?
I don't like my appliances making decisions.
No, and that's not you. Which port number is the NetBIOS UDP port?
Oh, bloody hell.
These are great.
Nobody uses NetBIOS anymore.
Might be true.
158.
You are incorrect. 137 is the correct UDP port.
But you played the correct tone, so I have to give him a point.
All right. Oh, did I? Oh, there.
Oh, now I take a half off.
All right. Thank you. I didn't realize I did that. All right. What does NT and Windows NT stand for?
Officially, new technologies. Unofficially, not today.
You're correct on both counts. Nicely done.
2 points.
Look at that, 2 points. Which programming language is named after the world's first computer programmer?
Oh, hell. Pascal.
You are incorrect. It's Ada, named after Ada Lovelace. I don't know who that is.
Programming language?
You're losing 0.4 for not knowing Ada Lovelace. Come on.
I'm not a programmer, I'm a hardware guy.
I didn't know either. What year did C++ first appear? Speaking of programming language questions.
Yeah, I'm doomed. Let's go for 1993.
You are one full decade off. 1983 is the correct answer.
You lose 10 points. No, I'm just kidding about that. You only lose one.
All right, it's not bad. Okay, what kind of server is a stripped down server designed to save space?
Physically, those would be Blade servers.
You are correct. It is the Blade server. Nicely done. Yeah. That's all your questions. We will not tell you how you did yet, because Joel has to do his. Joel, yours are Photoshop related.
Interesting. Okay.
Because you and I are big Photoshop users, And it seemed like an interesting. I was going to go, web comics maybe, but then that's like, you got to know everybody's comic. So this seemed like the smart thing. We'll find out now when I ask you the first question. What was the project / beta name for Adobe Photoshop 8 or Photoshop CS? I actually knew this one. I'm proud of myself for knowing this.
This is the secret name, like the code name?
Yeah, it was code name while they were working on it. Because this one, remember, CS was a big deal.
Honestly, I have no idea. I mean, don't even have a funny answer.
It is dark matter. Dark matter.
Nope.
It's pretty good. What year was Photoshop version 1.0 released?
94.
Oh, you're so close. 90 is the correct answer. 90.
Right. So he's off by four, so get four tenths.
I actually used that version in 93 once, and it was pretty bad.
Yeah, I didn't get into Photoshop until like 97, 98.
In what month in 1982 was Adobe founded? These are ex-Apple people. When did they found, Atari people, or was it Apple? I forget. Doesn't matter. What month went in that year of 82 were they founded?
82.
You have a 1 in 12 chance here.
Yeah. February?
You are incorrect. December is the correct answer.
Oh, I was going to say December too.
That's all right.
You're still getting a tenth of a point though for Scott confusing you with the question.
I told you, it's weird. What version of Photoshop CS introduced Puppet Warp?
5.
You are correct. Nicely done. Wow. CS5 was Puppet Warp.
5 points.
What Photoshop product is stripped down for non-expert users?
Elements.
You are correct. Nicely done. Third to last question. What keyboard key do you press when clicking About Photoshop and Help to see the project/beta/slash screen?
Nice warp. I know,
it's an evil one, this one.
Oh my gosh. Command P?
You are close. I'm going to give it to you because it's command is the modifier key.
So you would get a point, but you threatened the question maker, so it qualifies.
Well, there you go then. That one's out. All right. What year did Adobe launch Photoshop Lightroom?
Oh.
The only hint I'll give you is this year seems like it was just yesterday, but it was longer away than you think.
Yeah. 2001?
You are incorrect. 2007. Seven was Lightroom.
Yeah, loss of a point there.
Final question. What was the retail cost of Photoshop 1.0?
$399.
You are incorrect. $1,000, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my God.
I know, right? They paid that for that.
Yeah.
That's insane. All right. We've had both of you do your thing. That means Tom's going to add it up. How'd they do?
Ooh, this was a close one, Scott. This was right down to the wire. Todd with 4 points and Joel with 4.5.
Oh, my gosh. Look at that.
I did not feel like I squeaked ahead on that one.
I didn't either, but look what happened.
Well, it was that Photoshop 5 giving you 5 points that really helped you out.
Congratulations, gentlemen. You both did just fine. You played the game, and that's what matters most.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Play a little bit of what I call forecast. It used to be a show. Now it's a segment. I did that wrong last time too. It's where we predict the future. And I've got one today that I want to hear people talk about. And it kind of, Todd kind of lands right in the lap of conspiracy you were talking about earlier. Because I actually kind of really believe this. I think one day we will have an ultra rich CEO of some company. Could be Jeff Bezos, could be Tim Cook, could be whoever, right? Could be Sergey Brin. Could be anybody. That will go rogue and take over the military because they'll be like the dudes that provide all the military infrastructure and stuff, become the de facto leader of the United States and essentially steal power and control all data, all media, and all infrastructure, including power, water, everything. They'll control it all. And I realize this sounds like Kevin Spacey's character in the upcoming Call of Duty Modern Warfare, is it called? Is it Modern Warfare? Anyway, the new one that got announced at E3. Or before that, actually, and they showed it at E3. Anyway, he plays this exact guy. He's this huge founder and owner of this giant conglomerate that does all of the like military contracting stuff. And we haven't seen the story yet, but essentially one day just decides, you know what? I have the balance of power. I'm now going to take over, and there's nothing anybody, including your president or anyone else, can do about it. And now he's in charge and has crazy philosophies and all that. So I think that one day, may probably not my lifetime, that's a thing that happens. Thoughts, feelings? Am I wrong? Am I right? Todd, what do you say, man?
The important question is, will it be Peter Weyland or Haji Utani that is the one that takes over when we get taken over by the company?
Explain. Who are they? What's going on with that?
Those Weyland Utani? Oh, your nerd card is in danger.
It's all right. It's already burnt. And it's upstairs in a bad pair of pants, so don't worry about it.
From the Alien and Aliens universe, the company, which is basically you describe, was Weyland Utani.
Right. That's right. And he's the bishop-looking guy, right?
Yeah. He was the...
The first bishop.
Android of him, and also the villain.
Yeah. So Lance Hendrickson played the role of both. Like in three, he was the dude, and then he was also all the androids are based, or that model is based on him.
Right.
Right.
No arrogance there. No. But yeah, the
nerd card intact. I just want to say
saved. it's the direction that our society has been going. It's disturbingly easy to entertain a scenario like this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you see corporations kind of taking over some of the roles that the government has held. NASA in particular, we looking at SpaceX being more innovative and doing some of the things we used to look to NASA to do. The declaration, hell, I'll put people on Mars by 2026, when NASA's talking about, are we going to Mars or not?
Right.
So it may not be quite as blatant or as sinister as you lay out, but it could be slowly the jobs that government do for us now are being done and will be done more efficiently by corporations.
Yeah.
So one day we turn around and there may still be a token government there, but realistically the company is running the company, is the country or the planet.
Well, the concept of this whole thing is precisely why I have any interest in a new Call of Duty game. Like, I'm actually really excited to see that story and see how it plays out. Joel, how about you, man? What do you say?
I could see it happening, but I'm going to throw a twist and say, like, I think it might be not necessarily the CEO of a tech company like Apple or Google or something like that, but a gaming company.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you've got personalities out there like Notch from Minecraft or, then you've got like, Fantasy Tales like Ready Player One. And, with the new VR stuff that's happening, like I kind of feel like I can't remember what it was called, but in Caprica, the TV show, they had this. It was almost like a drug where people would put on these VR kind of visors and then they would kind of disappear.
New Cap City.
Yeah. So I feel like that would be a way for the power to really shift, where people are, they think it's entertainment, but really it just overnight it becomes, a control shift as opposed to entertainment.
All right. Well, now I put it in the hands of the most reasonable among us, Tom Merritt. What's the likelihood here?
What you're saying is that instead of lawyers doing all of this stuff like we have now, it'll be a CEO.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I mean, well, the idea is that he would wield so much, and maybe it's even a surprise to him at some point.
Because the government we have now controls the military, it controls all the data and the media and the infrastructure of the United States from a certain point of view.
Right.
So it's really almost not necessary for a company to take over, but merely get their guy in the office.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yes. But in the case of this scenario that I'm referring to in this game, and maybe my forecast is that taking it all over by force. Why? Because he's got an army of drones that are supposed to be, American drones.
I guess that's my point, is taking things over by force actually causes more resistance. Taking things over by subtlety is much more successful.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make a really bad Call of Duty game if it was like the subtle assumption of power without people noticing. What
a few laws were passed and some really long.
It was just a DVD of cutscenes.
Yeah. Yeah. But I, if you're talking about what actually could happen, I think that's more likely because, we always think about like, the storming in of the military, but it's a lot harder to conquer something militarily, as we have seen over and over throughout history, than it is to kind of just insinuate yourself, you know? And I don't want to necessarily Godwin's law this, but I'm gonna anyway. Hitler didn't conquer Germany. He got elected.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's I think more nefarious. And even beyond that, I think the nation state goes away. I don't think that, you know, we kind of live under the assumption that, like, oh, the way things are is the way they'll always be. The nation state's actually very new. So I think we're headed towards something that I can't predict that is going to become the new form of politics. And then I'm with you on your prediction that some kind of charismatic leader of an organization, whether it's a company or a movement, becomes able to take power in that new form of government or politics.
Right. Well, either way, it's fun. Like it's not fun when you're in the middle of it, I suppose. I mean, if it means destruction and the loss of lives, but it's an interesting idea. And I love movies that are based on this, and it's tropey as all hell and stuff, but I really like it. So one day when Jeff Bezos is
Lex Luthor,
who Kevin Spacey also played. I'd like to point that out.
Jesse Eisenberg.
We're screwed. All right. that's Forecast. Thank you guys for chipping in, and thank you guys for being here. That's the end of the show. We're done. We're gonna camp it up, pick up stakes, and move on to the next town.
We're gonna camp it up means something else.
It does. Oops. It was great having you guys on.
Boys.
I would like to know what more we could tell people about Todd and what he's up to. So Todd, where can people find you on the internet, and how can they find your great content?
Oh, my little camp is built at alphageekradio.com. You can find me and all the things I do there. If you just click on the shows tab, look at all the fantastic shows that have decided to add the live broadcasting experience to their shows. I encourage you, if you've got shows that podcasts you listen to that you think would benefit from adding the live experience, it is trivially easy these days for them to add that via Alpha Geek Radio. Send them my way. I'm always recruiting. These jokers had so many shows they wanted on at the same time. I wound up doing a bunch of extra channels. So I got capacity, baby.
Yeah.
Bring in the talent.
Well, I hope that people keep listening because it's awesome. We love it. And I love having my shows over there. So grats on all that stuff.
Thank you, Todd.
Yeah.
Anytime.
We love it. Joel, dude, tell people about your comic because it's rad and people should read it.
Thank you. You can read Starcrossed at starcrossedonline.com, and you can check out all of those commissions and stuff that I've been doing at joelduggan.com, including a podcast, The Citadel Cafe, that I just wrapped up the latest season on, which you can listen to on Alpha Geek Radio.
Nice.
Woo-hoo! So all of that stuff is over at joelduggan.com.
Todd, easy there, buddy. I'm going to have to call some guards in. Tom Merritt, anything else we have not mentioned that you'd like
to? Oh, no, I'm too busy reading Starcrossed, Scott.
It's good stuff, man.
I don't have time to plug tommerritt.com or Daily Tech News Show or anything.
Or Ace Detect on Twitter or FSL Denied. Yeah, it's good stuff. Any of those things. There's a lot coming up going on in and around Frog Pants. The Nerdtacular meetup is happening soon. It's not more than a meetup. It's a big event. We do it every year, and everybody at this table is going to be there, and many of you are going to be there. We can't wait to see you guys. If you want to see a great panel on comics, you can look forward to seeing me and Joel and Dunaway and Howard Porter from DC Comics. He'll be on that panel. We're going to have an amazing lineup. I can't wait to do that panel. It's going to be super, super rad, as will the rest of the event. So looking forward to that. We will be streaming it for those who can't attend. So look forward to that, both Todd streams and video streams. We'll have all that in one central place at some point. I think it's going to do it for us. I should say currentgeek@gmail.com is our email address. Please use it. currentgeek.reddit.com is our subreddit. Tom is right to push that each and every week on Twitter, @currentgeek, @ScottJohnson, @AceDetect. currentgeek@gmail.com, I already mentioned that. currentgeek.com is the website. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time. Andrew Allen does our music.
Woo!
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we finish our review of the legal battle brewing between Wizards of the Coast and Cryptozoic. The trade dress claimed by Wizards is the overall product appearance of Magic and its computer counterparts, alleged to include the packaging and 15-card contents of booster packs, the overall visual aspects of the cards, and the like. However, Wizards likely shot this claim in the foot by admitting all of this alleged trade dress has some functionality. Functional elements are not protectable trade dress under the Lanham Act, so this trade dress claim is likely dead on arrival. Turning to copyright, Wizards has set forth a compelling story of all the elements of Magic that Hex has allegedly copied. These copied aspects include the major types of cards, ability names on creatures, the same five colors, the same general rules of deck construction and combat, and the use of tapping cards. The vast majority of these appear to be the underlying facts or ideas that are not protectable creative expressions under copyright law. Many knockoff video games were able to escape copyright infringement over the last two decades on similar grounds. But some courts have recently taken to applying copyright infringement where the amount of total elements copied is significant and overwhelming. Based on Wizards' complaint, that could very well be the case here. So the copyright claim may come down to whether the judge or jury is sympathetic to the idea that knocking off most of the major aspects of a computer game is wrong. The bottom line is, Wizards will likely prevail on the patent claim, but will lose on the trade dress claim, which means the unpredictable copyright claim will determine whether Hex will be allowed to continue in this market for the long term. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy. If you want to hear more about this case and other similar topics, please check out my upcoming seminars at Gen Con in August, or see me at Nerdtacular.
Welcome to another iteration of The Geekly Scholar. I'm Rich Stroffolino, and each week I'll be highlighting an article with a geeky focus written with scholastic rigor. In a recent essay for The Guardian, author Will Self makes a seemingly trite observation about the death of the novel. This statement is hardly new. Luminaries from Walter Benjamin to Roland Barthes have begun this discussion decades ago. The piece entitled, "The Novel is Dead, This Time for Real," links the decline of the novel to a very specific cause, the obsolescence of its medium. This is the crux of the matter for Self. If people will predominantly consume literature on internet-connected devices at some time in the near future, Self cites 20 years, and readers will want to maintain connectivity during reading, the novel cannot survive as a popular medium for high literature, recessing to a niche and becoming classical, much as orchestral music has been relegated. Self cites the work of cultural critic Marshall McLuhan, writing in the 1950s, effectively predicting that in the coming years, information can be accessible beyond an individual subject, that it could be held and released at a distance. He didn't know it, but this could be a description of the internet, describing cloud storage and high-speed access. The novel is exactly the opposite. The great works of the form are as informational as they are narrative, an example being that there's no better guide to the realities of whaling than Moby Dick. McLuhan was one of the first to propose that the medium is the message, that the content bent itself around the form, and for Self, this is why the novel is dead, or at least terminal. The medium of its transmission is passé. So where does literature go if the novel is dead? Self does not set out to answer this question, but for a look at post-human literature, and yes, I know that term is pretentious, I direct listeners to Writing Machines by Catherine Hayles. This article is rife with British diction, and Self at times needs to be told, yes, we know you're smart. But the piece is so fascinating, I can't help but recommend it. I'm Rich, and this was The Geekly Scholar. If there's an article I need to check out, or you want links to the pieces I've highlighted, check out my Twitter feed at Mr. Anthropology.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.